So today we are working back into the sermon series, Prepare the Way, and the title of today's message is A New Name. If you have not been with us, we have been looking at the lives and the story of Zechariah and Elizabeth in Luke chapter 1, because it's ultimately their son, John, who will prepare the way for Jesus. And by studying this couple, we're hoping to ask ourselves a few questions. First of all, how can we prepare the way for a fresh experience of the Spirit during this particular Christmas season? And then secondly, how can we prepare the way for our lives to be a conduit through which God can continue to reach out to those around us? And today we get to the conclusion of this story of Zechariah and Elizabeth. I'll be reading in Luke chapter 1, starting in verse 57, if you want to follow along, if you brought a Bible with you. The words will also be up on the screen behind me as well. Luke 1, 57 through 66. When it was time for Elizabeth to have her baby, she gave birth to a son. And her neighbors and relatives heard that the Lord had shown her great mercy, and they shared her joy. On the eighth day, they came to circumcise the child, and they were going to name him after his father, Zechariah. But his mother spoke up and said, "No, he is to be called John." And they said to her, "There is no one among your relatives who has that name." Then they made signs to his father to find out what he would like to name the child. He asked for a writing tablet, and to everyone's astonishment, he wrote, "His name is John." And immediately his mouth was opened and his tongue set free, and he began to speak, praising God. All the neighbors were filled with awe, and throughout the hill country of Judea, people were talking about all these things. And everyone who heard this wondered about it, asking, "What then is this child going to be? For the Lord's hand was with him." We're going to stop there. Tonight, as we gather at 6:30, I'm going to actually get into the song, the prophetic song that Zechariah sings as a result of this experience, but that's going to come later. So let's look at now this particular passage. What do we learn? What do we see? What do we grapple with as the truth for today? Here's the first thing I noticed, that this celebration, this naming process, this entire episode is really a community event. Did you see how involved the community of people are in the lives of Zechariah and Elizabeth? I mean, at the very beginning and the end of the text, we see Zechariah and Elizabeth's neighbors are invited into their experiences. First, we see the neighbors share this couple's joy when this baby boy is born, and they recognize God's mercy. They're together celebrating the life of this baby, this boy, this promised one, this unexpected late in life baby that has arrived. This joy would have probably been even more evident in Elizabeth's life, because the belief back then, according to tradition, was that if you were unable to have a child, especially a son, to carry on the family name, then somehow God was judging you for something that maybe you had done. And so for Elizabeth, this is a moment where not only she's celebrating new life, but she's celebrating, in her context, her shame has been now taken away. And the whole community is there rejoicing with them. In fact, I learned this week as I was studying that according to Jewish tradition, the guests that we read about in this passage would have actually gathered in the family home every single night between the day of birth and the day of circumcision, which you just read. How many days would that be? 8. Anybody want to complain about Christmas guests now? I didn't think so. 8 straight nights of getting together to celebrate, to be together as a community of people, lifting up joy, celebrating God's mercy together. And then the neighbors also share in the couple's amazement when Zechariah has his tongue set free and regains his voice. They're there all the way through the beginning, the end. They share the joy. They celebrate the mercy of God together. And then at the end, when Zechariah has his voice restored, they are there in astonishment and amazement to be a part of that story as well. This is a real community event. And it made me wonder something. Is it possible that sometimes we seek to so protect our lives and our families that we miss out on sharing the mercy and the amazement of God with other people? And I get it. We want to be protective of ourselves and our families. We don't want to give so much that we eventually run out of steam and then we simply fall flat on our faces. But I wonder if sometimes we bank too hard in the other direction. We become so protective of ourselves and our families that we limit what God could be doing to draw people to himself. Are we so interested and focused on protection that we are actually preventing some beautiful things from happening? Or maybe to say it this way, does sometimes too much sheltering lead to not enough sharing? I'll be the first to admit, this is something that creeps into my heart. I want to protect the time that I have with my family, but I also want God to use my family in ways that can bring him glory and honor so that people could know and celebrate him together. I mean, it's one thing to tell somebody about something that's happened to you. It's an entirely different thing to experience it together, right? It's one thing to have an experience and then try and tell someone about it than it is to say, let's come together and experience it together. For instance, I have a relative who got married and had their honeymoon in this really remote, distant place called Hawaii. And this person constantly, when it comes up, is telling me about the beauty, the warmth, all of those things that Hawaii has to offer. And I love to hear about it, don't get me wrong, but hearing about Hawaii and being on the beach in Hawaii, I'm guessing there's a significant difference between the two, and God willing, I will find out someday. But it's a big difference between experiencing it together and simply hearing about it. Or maybe think about it this way, if you're a fan of theater. It's one thing to have somebody describe to you what it's like to sit there at Playhouse Square and hear the Phantom of the Opera, to hear those haunting tones, to see it happening on the stage right there in front of you. To hear about it is one thing, but to be there and experiencing it together is a whole nother story. Or how about this? There were a couple times that before I took my wife to go see the Ohio State Buckeyes play in the Horseshoe, I went by myself, and I got to see the sights. I got to see the band running it. I got to see Script Ohio. I got to see all of that stuff, and I could tell her about it, and it was all well and good, but it's totally different when you go together and you experience those things together. We are intended as human beings to be community organisms, to share things with one another. Jesus models this lifestyle with his disciples, doesn't he? I mean, he invites them into what he's doing. When he teaches, he brings them along. When he heals people, they're right there with him. When he sets people free of demonic oppression, they are right there watching it happen themselves. He's not doing all these things and then filling them in later. Oh, you guys should have seen it. No, they're right there experiencing it right alongside of him. I think at Christmas time, we tend to get together more often than usual. And I'm wondering, at least in my own life, and maybe this is for you too, can we extend that kind of living into the new year? Can we stretch ourselves and stretch our families to view our everyday lives as invitations for others to experience the goodness and the mercy of God? Now, this doesn't have to be complicated or all-consuming. I mean, just go out to dinner together. Or grab pizza and eat dinner in together. Go to the movies together. Rent a movie and have people over and watch it together. Go to the park together. It's free. Well, after winter's over, I guess. Don't go to the park now. It's really cold outside. Unless you're going to go sledding, I guess you could do that. But can we be together? Can we carry this feeling of being together past just the holiday season? So we see this community-oriented way of living. But we also see what I would call family traditions in the text this morning, family traditions. When it came time to name the boy, the assumption by all those who were gathered was that he would be named after either his grandfather or his father. Again, this is the Jewish tradition of the day. You have a baby boy, especially firstborn, and you are going to name that child the same as or very, very similarly to the child's father or the child's grandfather. So everyone simply assumes this child will be named Zechariah or something similar. But someone speaks up, and it's Elizabeth. Elizabeth protests and says, no. His name is supposed to be John. Somehow, clearly, Zechariah has communicated to Elizabeth everything that happened in that temple scene, even though he couldn't use his words, and she has believed in his experience. She has joined in this faithful trust in the promise that God has, and so she says, no, his name is going to be John. Now the people are really confused because they say, not only, Zechariah, are you not named John, there's not anyone in your entire family with that name. And that's the tradition. That's the way things work. You name that child based on your name. So they finally go to Zechariah because in that day, the father has the final say, right? If the father says it's going to be this, it will be that no matter what anybody else has to say. And so they go to Zechariah, and I'm believing that everybody assumed he's going to correct Elizabeth. We're like, no, that was her idea. This is what we're really going to do. This is my namesake. It's the way it's going to be. And so they ask him, making signs, it says, which I wonder, was he not only unable to speak, was he deaf as well? Because they're making signs to him. He motions, give me something to write with, and he writes down, his name is John. Removing any doubt as to how this child would be named. Some family traditions are wonderful, joyful, and even humorous. And many of them come about on the holiday. Maybe for some of you, it's going out and getting that family Christmas tree together, right? Or maybe you have other family traditions that you all do together, and it's something that you look forward to and reflect on every single year. Or maybe some of your family traditions are more likely to come about during family reunions, or family trips, or some sort of other events. I mean, how many of you have a family reunion every single summer? And you know that there are certain kind of things that are going to happen every single family reunion. Or maybe some of you go to a certain place and you celebrate with family and you do some of the same things. It's a rhythm. Whether it's every year or every other year, something along those lines. It's even true that the everyday ways that we do life sometimes get handed down to us by the generations that come before us. I remember when we first got married, my wife and I started to do dishes together, and I was informed that I was doing dishes wrong. Apparently, there is a correct order in how you do the dishes, what pieces and parts you do first, and then you save the others for last. And the question is, why is that the right way? Because that's the way I was taught. So whether it's big things or small things, these family traditions get handed down, and many of them are fun, are joyful, are humorous, right? They get passed down for so long that changing seems almost unthinkable. But there's a little bit of a darker side to family traditions, if we're honest, because there are some family traditions that are difficult, painful, even sometimes harmful. Some traditions that we receive from previous generations can be detrimental or even destructive to our own lives and our own relationships. Many of them are either emotional or relational in nature. Some of us were not taught very well how to deal with the rough patches of life. Some of us were not taught very well how to simply love and be loved by others. Some of us were not taught how to fight well. When I do premarital counseling with couples, I'm like, listen, it's not whether you will fight, it's how you will fight. And some of us are not taught to fight well so that we use conflict as a tool instead of a weapon. Because you can use it as one or the other. Some of us were taught to use guilt and shame as motivation for obedience. Some of us suffered verbal or physical or emotional abuse by the generations that came before us. Some of us receive family traditions that are addictive tendencies. Things like alcohol or drugs, things like sex or pornography, things like success or achievement. We've been programmed and told by the generations before us that this is how you find value. This is how you are given meaning. Some of us, it's just spending our money on stuff. And that stuff sometimes leads to crippling debt in our lives. So yes, sometimes family traditions are great and we celebrate them. We wrap our arms around them. Sometimes family traditions are not all that great. And I want to give a very clear message that I want to make sure we all hear today. If you have received some dangerous or destructive traditions from the generations that came before you, I want you to know that you do not have to keep them alive. And you certainly do not have to pass them along to the generations that are coming after you. You don't have to. Just like Zechariah, you can be set free. You don't have to carry it on. Elizabeth and Zechariah, because of their trust in God and the promises that they received, they refused to let family tradition dictate the future of their son. Yeah, they could have named him Zechariah, and he might have had a great life, but he would not have been what God intended him to be. When Zechariah exercised faith in the promises of God, he was set free by the power of God. And I still believe today that when we are willing to exercise our faith in the promises of God, that God can even still today set us free by his power. So this amazing thing happens. They go against family tradition. They decide that they are going to name their child John. And then Zechariah's mouth is opened, his tongue is set free, and he's able to speak and sing about the goodness of God. It's an amazing story, which is no surprise that we read that word travels quickly of what's happened, right? As a matter of fact, it says right there in the text, the story about what happened, this naming of John, it quickly spread throughout the entire hill country of Judea. This story was so unheard of, so popular, so gripping, that it spread quickly throughout the entire hill country of Judea. Now, we are very, very accustomed to news traveling quickly in our day and age. But must I remind you that this happened before the advent of social media. This happened before the advent of text messages. There were no cell phones. There was no email. There was not a fax machine to be heard. There was not a landline nor a postage stamp, not even the Pony Express. And yet, despite missing all of those easy ways to communicate, the word traveled quickly. And did you notice, this isn't even a city environment. It would be a little easier if this was a city environment. You just go next door or down the hall and you tell the person next to you. These folks are located, as it's called, in the sticks. Which, admittedly, I had to look up the origin of that phrase because I thought, I don't want to use something that's actually offensive in a sermon, and I was kind of excited to hear that it comes from this really strange story or something in Latin or Greek, but it's actually just because in the country there are more trees, and where there are more trees, there are more, yeah, exactly. So that was a little disappointing. But that's where these folks were from, and their communities were from the hill country. And yet, in spite of not having cell phones and phone calls, despite it being spread out, word traveled quickly. And everyone who heard the story had a similar question. What is going to happen next? They heard about this amazing thing that God had done, and their next question was, what is going to happen next? Boy, that's a kind of anticipation I would love to live with. Hearing about the great things that God has done and thinking, wow, I can't wait to see what comes next. What might happen? I believe that when the exercise of faith and the movement of the Spirit of God start to set people free, excitement is in the air. The future starts to look a little more hopeful. Right? When the exercise of faith is happening and the Spirit of God is moving, filling the lives and the lips of people, excitement is in the air. And a future that has looked bleak and dark for a long time. Because don't forget, in Luke chapter 1, the story of Zechariah and Elizabeth is interspersed with stories of Mary and Joseph and Jesus. Because for a really, really, really long time, hundreds of years, the future has looked very, very dim, very, very dark for God's people. Not a word from a prophet, nothing to bring them hope or encouragement. And now, stirring in some place in the sticks, God is moving. And the future starts to look just a little bit brighter, a little bit more hopeful. And I don't know about you, but I believe that we are living in a time right now, boy, could we use some hope. Boy, could we use the belief that the future actually looks bright. I mean, think about just some of the things that have happened in the last few months that you've seen in the newspaper or scrolling across the screen or on social media. Terrorist attacks around the world, threats of nuclear war, mass shootings, out-of-control wildfires, scandalous allegations at or near the top levels of nearly every area of society. And I just read the other day that the life expectancy in the United States of America dropped for the second straight year. The life expectancy of the people in the richest country in the world has dropped for 2 years in a row. And I know what you're thinking. You know, there are a lot of bad things out there. There's cancer, there's heart disease. But do you know what? We're actually winning some of those battles. There are less and less people dying of those things. And do you know what's causing the increases? Two of the biggest things are suicide and drug overdose. In fact, overdoses from opioid drugs by themselves went up another 28% in the last year. We desperately need hope. And things like that, a lot of times we can hear those statistics and point, well, that's over on the East Coast, or that's in the West Coast, right? Or that's in the big cities. My friends, those problems are here, not there. They're here. The people that you rub shoulders with every single day need hope. And you know where to find it. Well, we invite them into our lives so that they can see the hope that we have in God evidenced for them. And that we can pray by the power of the Spirit that they would be awakened and that they might be set free. Now that would make an amazing Christmas story. An amazing Christmas story. So a few things to think about as we finish our time together. Because we don't just want to read the word, we want to respond to the word as well. Here's the first one. How can you extend the community-oriented lifestyle of the holiday season into the new year? What kinds of things can you do? With who? So that we live these community-oriented lives so that God can spill out of our lives into others. Secondly, If nothing else, just thank God today for the joyful and the helpful family traditions that you enjoy, and ask God to give you the strength to overcome and leave behind family traditions that are sinful or harmful. Because that same Holy Spirit that set free the tongue of Zechariah is with us today and can continue to set people free. And lastly, I want you just to think of one person who you know is in desperate need of hope right now, and pray that the Holy Spirit would move in and through his or her life in a fresh way. Because, my friends, hope is not dead because Jesus is alive. So take a moment to pray. If you want to close your eyes, bow your head, that's fine. If you just want to read through those words as the Spirit continues to speak to your heart today, and then I'm going to close this with prayer in just a moment.